Good afternoon, everybody. I'm sorry that we're starting a couple minutes late. Technical difficulties. You always have to figure that these things happen. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. We're excited to be here. I think I can speak on behalf of all the panelists. We're going to kick off by just introducing the panel, who I'm lucky enough to work with on a regular basis. Let's start down at the end of the table with Colin.
Hi, I'm Colin. I oversee the day-to-day of MTV Digital. I think my role on the panel is a little bit different from Susie to my left here and Ellen in that I sit more on the content and programming side of the conversation of what we're talking about today, as opposed to more of the marketing side. So my team and my kind of day-to-day is really focused on how digital content, linear content, you know, creating experiences in the digital space, including in the social space, how that is really an extension of kind of our storytelling and programming, and that's really kind of the angle we come at from this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Susie Fogelson from Food Network and Cooking Channel. I'm thrilled to be here. So a little bit about what I do. I'm with Food Network for almost 12 years, which is almost hard to believe. My curiosity with social media and with digital marketing is just that. I feel like I probably have more questions than I have answers for you guys today, because I am certainly as much a student as I try to be a teacher. But it is social media, and digital in particular, is one of the most exciting things I think to happen to a marketer. To be able to have a conversation that is always on with your consumers, I think, is a great gift, but also a great responsibility. So I look forward to hopefully answering some questions today and, you know, learning a lot from my fellow panelists.
Great. Hi, I'm David Jones, EVP of Marketing at Shazam. And most of you know us for Music Discovery Company, but we're now broadening out into television, both shows and advertising, and essentially making television interactive through the second screen. We have quite a bit of examples to tell you about the Super Bowl, the Grammys, many other things that we've done. But lots of great opportunities to extend programming from the television screen to the second screen.
Okay. And I'm Ellen Stone. I'm at Bravo. And I head up the marketing group. And our mission at Bravo is basically about conversation and driving the conversation. And so social and all things digital, actually, are incredibly important when you want to have a conversation that's not one way. And so Bravo has always wanted to and continues to take a very big stake in the world of social and learn as much as possible. So I'm psyched to be with this panel, too.
And lastly, I'm Tara O'Donnell. I'm with Text 100 Global Public Relations. I head up our consumer and entertainment practice, and I work with a lot of the brands and people sitting here up on the panel today on a daily basis. So we also wanted to get a sense of where you're from, where the audience is from, not necessarily your hometown, but what type of field you're in. So I was thinking, with just a show of hands, you might be able to let us know if you're in marketing. Okay. And what if your title is digital? Can you raise your hand? Something digital related? Great. And how about advertising? Anyone on the advertising side? Okay. Great. I'm sure there's probably some others I didn't cover, but just which one?
TV.
Oh yeah, oh, TV. Right. Yeah, that's a good one. That's what this panel's about, right? Yes, TV and entertainment. Who's in the TV space? Awesome. Most important. Yes. Great. So that'll just help when the panelists are answering questions. They can help gear them.
Anything from that, actually.
All right, so let's get started. So today we're here to talk about and debate the burning question of whether or not social media actually drives TV viewership. Most networks are supplementing and integrating their TV program with some type of social interaction, but why? Do we know, is there proof that there is a correlation between social and driving eyeballs to the bigger screen? You know, we're going to debate that today. We're going to talk about it. And the panelists are going to talk about lessons learned, best practices, and some of their experiences so that hopefully they can give you some tips that you can walk away with and also a sense of whether or not they've actually feel that there is a correlation between the two. So we're going to get started. So our first question to the panelists is, what makes an engaging social media campaign that's complementary to linear programming? I thought maybe Ellen, I'll hand it off to you to maybe kick that up.
I think there are a lot of things about social that you should take into account. First of all, of course, it has to enrich and actually enlarge the experience that they're getting from the linear. And so we do a lot of things at Bravo to make that experience richer. Number one is we're inviting them to have the conversation, and then we're also inviting them to have the conversation with the content. So, So we're inviting our talent to participate in conversation. We've created such social tools like the Bravo Talk Bubble for events, like a finale or a premiere, where we're inviting our fans to come in, watch the premiere of The Real Housewives of OC, and then literally ask one of the housewives, what were you thinking when you did, and we won't say what they did. But that way, they get to feel like they're a part of what was happening, and they're part of the conversation, and the conversation becomes meaningful. So the biggest importance for us with social is to make sure that our conversation is important and meaningful and relevant and gives them something extra that they wouldn't get just from either watching it live or conversing outside of the Bravo space.
I know we have some other examples. Susie, do you want to talk a little bit about what Food Network's been doing?
Sure. So what makes an engaging social media campaign?
I think you might need to go closer to the mic.
Yeah, complimentary television. I think, like all sort of interaction with your consumers, our goal is to create great content, right? So if you're going to have a great social media campaign that complements TV, it should be great content. It should be about your brand, consistent with your brand. But it should be its own unique experience and sort of extension of what they're watching from a linear perspective. I know Colin knows a whole lot about this. We did something around Thanksgiving. We did something called Thanksgiving Live, which may sound like not that revolutionary, but we haven't done live programming at Food Network for, well, over 12 years. And it was called Calling All Cooks, if you can imagine. And it was a call-in show. So Thanksgiving is literally our Super Bowl for Food Network, and so we decided what better way to kick off our biggest event than to do a live two-hour block of Thanksgiving. So we had kind of the best Food Network talent, everybody from Bobby Flay to Ann Burrell to Alex Garnaschelli to Alton Brown to Rachel Ray, all in the same kitchen, you know, there to be your butterball hotline, right? So there to be, you could Skype, you could Facebook, you could Twitter, you could email. Into this, you know, two-hour block. And not only were they answering questions, but we also had Ted Allen kind of as a man on the ground, as well as a real, you know, a body of Food Network Kitchen's cooks ready to answer any and all questions so that there was a real, you know, a voice at the end of the line. Even if it wasn't Bobby Flay, you still had, you know, an expert teaching you, helping you make sure that your stuffing wasn't dry that year. So it was incredibly successful. In 2 hours, we got 20,000 more Facebook likes. We had 15 million social impressions across GetGlue, Facebook, and Twitter. Probably one of the most exciting things was that we had five simultaneous trending topics, which is not typical for us. But in the two-hour window on a Saturday at noon, not even in prime time, we thought that those results were pretty remarkable. We did use traditional media, our air, to drive to it, and we're going to show you a look at the promo.
Hopefully. I think that we're going to skip the promo. I'm sorry about that, Susie.
It's so good.
No, it's okay. We'll just keep going.
Okay. Well, anyway, okay. It's a great promo. You guys have to take my word for
it. I'm sorry about that.
We'll watch those at the end of the panel.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, to talk about a really great application for social media to really help people find solutions on the ground from the people that matter most, our talent are obviously very powerful in the social space. A live experience is obviously a great way to plug into social. So I think it was probably one of the most compelling things we've done in the space thus far.
And, you know, when we're talking about social, we're talking about every type of platform, so including mobile, and I know, you know, David introduced himself from Shazam. There's great examples of how mobile complements linear programming. Do you want to just give a quick example?
Yeah, sure. So for the last year and a half, we've had over a dozen different television shows essentially work Shazam into their second screen experience, so extending the programming from linear to the mobile device. And, you know, we've learned over time that bonus content, of course, is key. People are interested in seeing more about their favorite actors and actresses, upcoming scenes perhaps several weeks out in the future. One example was especially good, ABC, when they were launching this season's Grey's Anatomy, the promo was Shazamable. So it turns a 30-second commercial into a 4-minute video engagement on the second screen, and that's great. They loved it. It gets the word out, gets people engaged to drive tune in, and then the content from show to show as it changes is a way to bridge from episode to episode to stay engaged, to tell your friends about it, and keep the ratings up and the advertising and sponsorship dollars coming in. So whether it's Being Human on the Sci-Fi Channel, whether it's the Super Bowl that was Shazamable, the Grammys that were Shazamable, other shows in the future will be Shazamable. The whole idea is it's a rich, satisfying experience on the second screen. And it's saved in your tag list, just like your music is saved in the tag list. So for those mobile snacking moments, you can come back to it later. People do that all the time. We see that in the numbers. If you're waiting in line for Starbucks or for a meeting to start or for a conference panel to start, you can go check check some of this content and consume it wherever you are. So we've had some great success stories with our folks, and we'll talk more about some of the stats that come out of that.
Yeah, and I think the point across the board is that social can really extend the life of whatever the program is, whether that's before the premiere, after the show. So, I mean, Shazam's a great example of that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that every linear priority needs a social component? Do you want to maybe call and take that?
I think yes, but it's scaled. I think the show, any TV show is going to be social whether you drive it or not. So it's really about deciding how much you want to amplify that and what are the key opportunities, I think. You know, we think about different types of engagement depending on the type of show. So you might have a one-off live event, and the way that you engage with the audience might be different than you would with a weekly episodic reality show versus a weekly episodic scripted show. It really kind of depends on that, and I think the level of engagement. We look at social media as kind of a really broad ecosystem, a whole set of different tools, whether we're using Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or Tumblr, and, you know, some of that falls further on the kind of spectrum of kind of branding and marketing, and then on the other end of the spectrum might be about content distribution and audience engagement, and kind of how do you pull those different levers depending on the show at a different time period. A lot of times we'll engage with an audience anywhere from 4 to 6 months out from a show before a TV show even exists to start to build a community and a kind of, you know, tease something out in that way. And then the way we engage with them when a show is active might be very different, and the platforms change, whether it's in an actual live environment during a kind of a co-viewing experience with the way the audience talks about a show in real time when it's airing versus what happens in kind of the days and weeks in between episodes. Mm-hmm. We also look at social media as an opportunity to build kind of a bridge strategy. If you build a community with an audience, then there could be, you know, months, half a year between seasons of a show, but the idea is to continue to engage them that way. So, I mean, we've been using this term social media campaign. I think when I think of the word campaign, I think of it more kind of stunt-based. And we do things like that, but we really emphasize this idea of kind of community over campaigns. It's more that daily engagement with the audience, having that regular dialogue with them that I think is really key. It's that kind of unsexy stuff that really pays off, because that's where you get the quality of the audience engagement.
Yeah, and I know, do you want to talk about that?
I was just going to add one thing to that. not only is it about the campaign, but it's also knowing a real lot about each of the different tools you have. So how Facebook, and y'all know this, how Facebook works differently from Twitter, works differently from Google Plus, although that's something we're still figuring out, works differently from Pinterest. So one of the reasons why you use them at different times is because they do different things. So I want Twitter on during the show. I want people talking about it. I want to get to be a trender topic. I want to really engage other fans to tweet back to us. I'm going to use hashtags on air, and I'm going to tweet during the day and have them check in at that time or Shazam something. But Facebook, to your point, is a community that I can keep an ongoing relationship with as long as I keep it fresh and as long as I keep it, you know, authentic to what we're talking about and don't try to be too commercial or too this or too that. So it's about the timeliness, but understanding what tool you're using and the best way to use them.
So just further to that point then, have you seen specific tools drive more interaction related to rating? So do you feel that do you have any proof that using those things has really helped drive Bravo's ratings?
I would say that, and I believe this about all media, I think applying media on top of media is a stronger way of messaging than using one by itself. Can you do that? Absolutely. But when you utilize multiple media on top of it, social, even with digital, with traditional, you get a much stronger impact because you're hitting your consumer from different angles. So I think that there are ways. So for example, I mentioned the Bravo Talk Bubble. It isn't just Twitter that is on the talk bubble. It's Twitter, plus it's Facebook. It's all those things come together, plus it's the talent coming in on whichever vehicle they want. And I do think that when you look at social, and this is kind of a little veering from your question, but when we've had some success with social in terms of hitting the tune in, which actually is a different question, so should I answer that, or you want me to wait?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yes, I think that in terms of a campaign, whether it's multiple social platforms together work better, and also social plus other media outlets work better. So combinations and force, I think, provides best impact as long as they're relevant, strategic, and focused. Mm-hmm. On your second question, in terms of how social has impacted our ratings, can I say 100% social has impacted our ratings? Scientifically, I haven't been able to completely prove that out, but we have seen a lot of very positives in that direction. We just launched what's called the Social Edition, and we've invited our fans at a premiere of The Housewives of Atlanta, which is a very quiet show. No, I'm just kidding. Housewives are anything but quiet. And we say, Google, Facebook, tweet, whatever you want to do, create that conversation. And if you create that conversation when you're watching that show, we are going to have your story told on the next encore, the repeat. And then 4 days later, when you watch that repeat, you see the fans, they get to have their 15 minutes of fame, but they're also telling a different story. They're changing the content of that premiere. And we're seeing double-digit increases over our usual repeats. Mm-hmm. It's been phenomenally successful. Can I say 100% that's going to work forever? I'm good with it right now. I'd rather have a social edition than a non-social edition because our repeats are really seeing some lift in ratings. So yes, I think that there is a really good linkage between social and our product.
Anyone else? Colin, you feel like you look like you have something to say.
No, that's generally the way we talk about it too, is I think it's really early days for measurement and drawing direct correlation between what happens in social. I think Nielsen did one of the few fleshed out studies where they showed that there was a correlation between measuring social media buzz and ratings increase. I think it was something like 9% increase resulted in like a 1% ratings increase, and it was something that they tracked over, you know, extended period of time. So, and I think we're going to get more and more, scientific kind of analytical measurements to work with. But I mean, the way we talk about it is, if you had a choice to have the social media engagement or not, of course you want that. I mean, I think we feel very strongly that there's a strong correlation there. And if you're engaging an audience and talking to them in an authentic way and on a consistent basis, of course it's going to do that. I mean, when you talk about what actually drives ratings, what platforms and tools are valuable there, I mean, we look at the stuff that's much more real time, you know, things like Twitter or check-in apps or our co-viewing app. We have a second screen co-viewing app called MTV Watch With that kind of surfaces the best of the social conversation in real time while you're watching a show, as well as allows us to program content to the audience. Those things that happen in real time are obviously the most straightforward tools to communicate to an audience, tune in and get them to engage in a show in real time. But like I've said before, I think there's lots of different ways you're connecting with the audience, and almost in more ambient ways, right? You're just always in the background, always in some back channel of their social conversation all the time, and that's what the space we try to be. And you know, a big part of it is how can we amplify what's going on. You know, we purposely live tweet every one of our primetime shows and engage with the talent from those shows to do that, because that really sets the tone for the conversation for the entire week. And if we can kind of, we typically are lucky in that we're able to get a lot of our shows to become national, if not worldwide, trending topics frequently, and it's because we do that. We engage with talent directly, engage with the audience directly, and really amplify that conversation. So those things we feel really strongly are a big part of kind of engaging and driving towards ratings.
Mm-hmm. So going back to something that you said earlier about community and driving community when there's not necessarily a program on or launching, I'd be curious to hear from the panel about, you know, what is the social strategy in between programming? Because a lot of social is directly related to linear. So maybe, Susie, do you want to talk about that?
Just something comes to mind as you asked that. I think food is so inherently social that people really want to talk about food. And I mean, I think we all know someone, if not you being the person that takes a picture of what they've just eaten, wants to post it and wants to talk about it. So I think we have a really great constant conversation. I'm so in awe of how I think Bravo has managed to create a conversation around their programming and entertainment. We aspire to make our entertainment programming that relevant and important part of conversation. The good news, though, is that we are there, you know, from a food perspective. So a funny one that I'll mention is that, so in between, you know, anything that we are promoting, per se, we're just keeping in touch. And one of the things that comes to mind is on our Facebook page, we just threw out ketchup or mustard, you know, ketchup or mustard. So, like, raise your hands. Ketchup? Ketchup? Okay, mustard. Wow, that's surprising.
I think that's different from your...
Ketchup took it hands down. But 7,000 responses later to ketchup versus mustard. So it's just such a cool way of just keeping in touch, and it is creating community versus... Because I had no condiments campaign. It was just chatter. So that's just one example that comes to mind.
So in going with that... What other learnings has any of you found from whether it's promoting social programs that are supporting linear or not? Are there learnings that you can talk about? Do you
sure,
have any?
Sure. Yeah? This is not a surprise. Authenticity, authenticity, authenticity. And I'm sure, Susie, you get this all the time. Foodies are crazy in terms of don't try to take me off topic. So if we're on Top Chef's Facebook page and we want to promote something that's not food related, it's going nowhere fast. Or if people feel that we're giving them a commercial message and it's on Top Chef, no. Because the show is about credibility, it's about food, and that's what they're here for. On the other hand, if we're on a Real Housewives page, it's really about entertainment. It's about what's going on in pop culture, and we can go a little bit farther, and it's still authentic for that brand. So one of the biggest learnings, and we learn it every day, again and again and again, is how far you can stretch your messaging, and how far you really have to stay in a core focused area. And when I say stretch, I don't mean we ever go off the brand. You really have to know your brand and know your audience. But we all know, like, where can we bring in new messaging, because everyone wants to keep it fresh, but you just really have to be careful. So you have to know what your authentic voice is depending on who you're talking to. It's one of the big learnings at Bravo.
Sure. Anybody else?
I would say, to the point of kind of authenticity, authentic voice, for us, the way we execute that a lot of times is original content. You know, within these fan communities around our shows, it's about giving them something that they feel like is special and something done specifically for them. So with shows like Teen Wolf, which is our kind of one of our big hit scripted shows, we really engaged the audience by working with the talent and telling them exactly what was happening within the Facebook community. And getting them to create content specifically for those fans. We're doing that with a lot of new shows now, whether we're doing things like having the talent do straight to camera, kind of speaking to the audience, thanking them once we hit a certain milestone in terms of our followers, or doing, you know, twit picking photos from behind the scenes while they're filming an episode. We'll do live stream chats that just live on Facebook, particularly for that fan community, and take live fan questions immediately after the show or during the show. You know, and they respond so positively to that, and we see that as a kind of a big play. You know, we just did a clip the other day for we have a spinoff, Jersey Shore spinoff show with Pauly D, which is launching in 2 weeks. And we had him shoot a fan video that we posted on the Facebook page, and it was the most streamed video we had that day across all of MTV Digital, including full-length episodes of shows. And that just shows how the huge difference in feeling like you've crafted something specifically for a community and how they respond to that. And that's become a bigger and bigger part of our play.
Yeah. Anyone else? Susie or David?
I feel like I've already spoken.
Well, I can chime in. When it comes to interactivity, when you think about social media, there's a ton of tweeting, commenting going on Facebook and Twitter. You know, for a 5-second call to action on screen, we've seen some pretty amazing results for television shows and series where, with those 5 seconds on screen, you can get more Shazam tags than tweets or Facebook likes combined. So if you think there's a ton of social conversation going on, and there is, just a little bit of prompting with something as simple as Shazamming a broadcast in seconds, just get started on a journey. You know, you can literally double the amount of interactivity and engagement that you're experiencing. And what we find fascinating, or certainly our show producers, the networks, and even our television advertisers find exciting, is that's a curated positive experience that they're creating, building into Shazam. It's the sentiment's always positive, whereas in social media it may not be, and it's a long form engagement. It turns a 30-second ad into a 4-minute engagement, or just going deeper in the content. So it actually works really well. Our partners are pretty excited about that, and we're still figuring out exactly the value of a tag versus a tweet versus a like versus a post. I think all of us up here will talk more about that over time, but it's comparable in volume to what's happening in social media, and it's all for, you know, 5 seconds on screen, just as a visual prompt to engage.
Yeah, that's great. And we will talk more about metrics, and we'll talk more about advertising in a second. But I thought maybe we'd touch upon, since we talked about learnings, maybe we'll talk a little bit about some successes over the past year, some examples of where you've done it really well, and, you know, something that you want to build upon. Colin, you look busy, but did you want to talk a little bit about...
I'm preparing my answer. I think, again, kind of going back to this idea of commitments over campaigns, I mean, I could cite, you know, a lot of different things in terms of kind of more stunt-like successes or just taking opportunities of big moments. So for us, the Video Music Awards are always a huge kind of social TV event for us each year. It just drives, you know, this huge kind of pop culture water cooler conversation. Obviously, the big moment in the VMAs, one of the big moments in the VMAs this past year, was Beyoncé revealing her pregnancy. And I think the kind of the cool story there was what a lot of people didn't realize was she revealed it on the red carpet, but it wasn't on camera. We had one of our social media people literally in the paparazzi pit and took a twit pic of her kind of revealing her baby belly on the red carpet, and then we tweeted that out immediately, and that became our most retweeted tweet of all time. That really kind of triggered the whole conversation that night, and it kind of became a trending topic early on, which then built towards the actual reveal moment in the show. So we kind of thought that was a pretty amazing kind of example of how social media, like, it kind of spread this kind of the buzz for this like wildfire in real time during the show, and then it only accelerated once the big moment happened in the show itself. And it was because we were there early on and really kind of rallied all of our forces together. We look at social media is not this discrete kind of activity that happens with just a kind of a small team. It's really this ecosystem within our entire digital network. So it's social media folks, it's our SEO people, it's people buying SEM terms, it's people creating content in real time around that, and how all these things kind of cross-promote, cross-link to each other, paying attention to how the audience is talking about a show in real time and amplifying that by kind of organically trying to rank against things, buying terms against it, and kind of building around that. And so that I think that was a kind of a big success story. Something completely kind of different is, again, I mentioned Teen Wolf. You know, that was an established kind of name that was out there, but what MTV's execution around that was going to be was kind of an unknown. So we really kind of went out there with the goal of building a community around that and getting people excited about the kind of the new take on this this kind of older franchise and new characters, you know, many, many months out before the season even began, with the goal of kind of breaking a kind of a huge, you know, building a huge fan base before the show even began. And, you know, we just, after the past season, we just broke a million Facebook fans for that series. So we feel like we have this really strong, highly engaged kind of fan base going into season two this summer. And that's really powerful because we know these are dedicated viewers. These are, you know, evangelists for this series.
Yeah.
So in terms of kind of looking at kind of campaign-like things, we think those are kind of big successes. But again, overall, it's the real day-to-day kind of engagement in the community that we feel like is the big success story.
What about Food Network? Any examples?
Well, one comes to mind. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the Great Food Truck Race. It's pretty much what it sounds like. Food trucks racing across the country. I kind of like to think of it as Food Trucks meets Apprentice a little bit, because we put these people through hell in every city that they go to. This is a pretty food truck-friendly city too, right, Austin? What I think is so cool about it is that food trucks, you know, survive on social media, right? There's really no other. It's the democratization of the restaurant industry. You know, I'm going to buy a truck and I'm going to pop it up and I'm going to make money and cook my food. And how do I tell people about it? It's, you know, just a brilliant connection. So it's you know, hard to beep that up, right? So we had food trucks at the heart of our social campaign. What I think is so cool about what we do with food trucks is that we promote, you know, the social element on TV, sort of in the show, whether it be rally behind your truck, you know, whether your truck's in this season's show, or whether you have a favorite food truck in a local city and you want them to be on next season's show. Just driving sort of engagement and enthusiasm. But the cycle of Great Food Truck Race this year was what was so exciting. So we drove from television to social. The idea was that you could get 100 people could have free lunch in their city by sort of rallying behind their favorite food truck. That then created an experiential component, right? So I love, you know, social creating an experiential component, which is obvious, but wonderful when people can get out there and physically, you know, get on the ground and support something, which then drives PR, and it actually drove traditional PR for us. So we did it in New York, and the Daily News came out and actually covered it. So they're not only talking about this experience, but about the show. So we're driving buzz, and then we're driving back to the ratings. So it is wonderful, I think, when social media can actually either start with traditional media, then branch out on its own, and then sort of come back to creating buzz and PR, which then turns into ratings. I think food trucks is a special example because it is so connected, you know, to this type of marketing. But we were thrilled, and it was really gratifying to actually, you know, be able to feed, even if it's a small number of people. Obviously, you can tell many, many, many more thousands of people about it and get them sort of rooting for something. So I think that's the finest example we have of using it for a primetime series.
I will mention, just because Susie used that example, that the cast from the food truck show, The Great Food Truck Race, are going to be at South by Southwest on Sunday morning speaking. So if you
want
to...
Nice plug, too.
Yeah.
And then just the metrics on that, though. So over 6 weeks, we got 100,000 more likes to our Facebook page, which... The Thanksgiving Live that we talked about earlier drove, you know, 20,000 likes in 2 hours. Those are probably our daytime viewers that maybe are not part of Facebook or just getting, you know, hooked up to Facebook. This is a whole different audience, right? This is a primetime audience over a 6 week window. So I think those are two. While they all come back to Facebook, and I think we had 70,000 more Twitter followers after the Great Food Truck Race. I guess I feel like those are very different audiences, you know, coming to social media for Food Network at the end of the day, which is great.
Yeah. Ellen,
sure.
I'll
do that too.
Sure.
We've got a show, Watch What Happens Live, which is an interactive late night show. It's hosted by Bravo's own Andy Cohen. And the whole point of the show is to interact with its fans. So when the show starts, he's like, post me on my Facebook page, tweet me, call me, whatever you want to do, talk to me. And he literally engages the fans because he takes the posts and he reads them and he tweets and all of those kind of things. Well, about 2 years ago, 6 weeks before New Year's, they decided to do a special New Year's party celebration and said, hey, market it. 6 weeks out. Yay! So there's not a huge amount of things that were, and you know, you have this much budget. So we were like, what are we going to do? And we had some success with a company called Foursquare, which I would guess most people here, since it actually broke out here a couple years ago, the location-based mobile app Foursquare, and we thought, let's do something. It's about New York, it's about New Year's, it's about Andy Cohen, it's about Watch What Happens Live New Year's Party. And we created a check-in frenzy and said anybody who checks in to Andy Cohen's Watch What Happens Live New Year's Party can potentially see their check-ins during the show. And we started, people had done this with Twitter, but no one had ever checked into a show and then seen it online. Mm-hmm. We started a frenzy. It was insane. We had check-ins every 1 to 2 seconds. People were checking into the show. And it was great. Our control room was ready to kill us, but it was great because the technicalities, and I don't even understand of how you get the check-ins on air in a live time. Apparently it's very difficult. But it was wonderful because we had such engagement, and we were able to, on a very short amount of time, engage a lot of people in on a night where Bravo and Watch What Happens Live was a very new player. You know, people knew about, right. You know, the big Dick Clark celebration, okay. People knew about Anderson Cooper, okay. But nobody really knew Watch What Happens Live was coming out on New Year's for the New Year's party. And we had a really great check-in showing and a really fun night, and Andy was happy, which was always good.
Great.
Talent happy.
What? Yeah.
Talent happy.
Talent yeah. happy.
Talent happy. Maybe we should talk about talent next. Thinking about talent. Yeah, let's talk about how you use talent in social media campaigns.
Talent, I mean, I think the easy answer is talent is key. I mean, we know that the audience, that's the most effective way in social media to engage the audience is engage with talent. The good news is for us, at least on MTV, our talent, our talent gets it, is already engaged on social media, is very willing and excited to kind of build stuff with us and interact with us. Whether it's, you know, coming in, you know, we've been doing things lately where we're kind of letting our talent kind of guest edit our Twitter account and literally man our Twitter account live during a show and take over the main MTV account and tweet from that and then retweet fans and kind of, you know, interact with people directly, direct message people. And I think that it's just, again, it's finally kind of, we've been circling around this idea of how you kind of connect the audience with the talent that they love on these shows. And I think social media has empowered that in a more authentic way than anything we've been talking about for years on the internet when you would try and do live chats with, you know, with talent and trying, and it just never felt real or it felt very, mm-hmm. you know, it just didn't have the impact and kind of reality now. So I think, you know, we're getting to the place now where it's like, do you bake this into talent contracts and require them to do it? And I think that's going to be the next phase of it. How much do you pay them versus how much do you expect them to do it for free? The good news is, particularly the younger talent, they get it. They appreciate the value of it. They appreciate that by working with us, they're going to grow their own followings, which is supportable, and they can then take that with them once they move on to the next phase of their career. So it's a kind of a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah.
I'll say something different just because that's so true and obvious for us as well. I'll talk about the challenges. How about that? So we've got a lot of, you know, incredibly popular talent. I follow them all because I have to, but also because I like to. I think they're kind of afraid of Facebook. We were talking about this earlier. They're really comfortable with Twitter. But they're a little afraid of Facebook. I think it's too high maintenance. I'm not sure that they know exactly. They're not all as probably socially adept, socially media adept as maybe the MTV crew. I think that's a challenge for us because we really would love to have that level of engagement with them. So we'd certainly bring talent into our Facebook page, but doing more with talent on their Facebook pages is certainly something we're curious about. And then the other challenge is that the talent are their own brands, right? I mean, they're certainly ambassadors for Food Network and Cooking Channel, but they're their own brands. Sometimes they'll use their Twitter, for instance, for very commercial messages. which I think is, I don't know, as a user, I think that's a bit of a bummer, you know? It's like, no, I really wasn't thinking about that mortar and pestle on Open Sky. I wasn't, actually. And so I think that I always get bummed and come down on them when I feel like they abuse their rights. And don't, you know, they pull like, sorry, but a Kim Kardashian, right? I just feel like it becomes less meaningful when it's really commercial. And then they're also their own brands, and some of them are very feisty, and so they'll say things that are, in fact, very off-brand for Food Network, like douchebag and stuff like that. So,
and how many people are tweeting that one?
And I didn't say who, though. But so anyway, I think there's just inherently there's some challenges with you. You love them because they can draw on like your own, you know, mothership brand, and that they are their own voice. And who better to talk about what's going on air or something that's happening, you know, in the digital space than them to their fans. But there are some pitfalls that you can hit every now and again.
David, do you?
Yeah, at Shazam, we're one step removed from the talent compared to peers up here. But we do know that talent-specific bonus content is especially attractive. Like Christopher Gorham on Covert Affairs, he films a segment every episode in each city. This is a CIA show around the world. They film this Globe Tracker video vignette every episode, and that's what you can get access to by Shazamming the show, and that's some of the most popular content. So everyone wants more of the talent. It could be deleted scenes, it could be full performances in a contest, judges' deliberations, but it's all around the talent, and it doesn't have to be more of the same. It can be something completely different that's just they can get a taste of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything to add to. Yes, our housewives love to talk and love them for it. You know, even when we don't invite them into the conversation, they come into the conversation and we love them for it. So, you know, being a TV brand, being a content provider, the access to talent is so critical because it's something that, you know, everybody else can't have. So you have to look for what is that extra that you can provide. And for us, it's talent. And it's the feeling of being able to talk to talent as if they're your friend. As if they're your friend.
Okay, so what about advertisers? How do you integrate advertising into social campaigns, or do you? Do you want to talk about that now?
Very, very carefully. Because your social conversation is very authentic. I know I say that word too many times. It's very authentic to who you are. So that's your brand voice. That's your brand. That's your personality. That's who you are. So when you integrate an advertiser, all of a sudden you're becoming a more commercial prospect. We are pretty firm that our voice, our social push, is pure to the brand. However, what we will do is we'll invite our advertisers to come in and participate in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that way it's organic, so no one's going to get mad at the advertiser. So you really just have to be incredibly careful, because I understand the want to have some of that halo. I mean, I want to have some of that halo. But you just have to be very careful, because you are having a direct conversation with your fans. You are having a direct conversation who makes or breaks your tune-in. Mm-hmm. And there are other ways to figure out, like Shazam is a great way to add advertisers in a very open way. So there's a plug.
Yeah, David, I mean, you can talk to advertising and how that's worked.
Yeah, so we have sponsorships have worked out really well for certain shows or campaigns that are Shazam enabled. One example is Being Human, so you can the entire tag result for Being Human, and this flyaway sweepstakes to go to where it's filmed is actually sponsored by Lexus, and so it's a subtle thing worked into the bumpers, the promo spots, and the commercial breaks when they tell you to use Shazam for the show to get all these great extras. The sweepstakes is sponsored by Lexus, so that's one easy way to do it. We've actually, of course, Shazam enabled television ads. 26 ads, for example, in the Super Bowl were Shazam enabled. Millions of interactions back on February 5th. You know, people were winning cars, getting free gift cards from Best Buy, a free download from LMFAO, chances to enter sweepstakes, quite a lot of different things, different types of payoffs or value propositions for the consumers by Shazamming. So, you can drive social around. It doesn't have to be sweepstakes, just that bonus content, more information, and special offers around advertisers, and it's working. We for example, had more tags for the commercials in the Super Bowl that had calls to action on screen. We had more tags than total social media comments combined for those brands. And again, those were great social engagements, deep, rich time spent in the app, engaging with their content or signing up for this promotion or that promotion. So it absolutely can work. You know, we've had challenges in other situations. I can't name the show, but you know, most of our television partners have sponsors for their shows already or special events. And if we want to bring a sponsor into the Shazam tag result and the Shazam experience that maybe conflicts with the sponsor of the show, that can be a tough conversation, and sometimes those deals just don't go through. And we've had that happen a couple of times. But thankfully, we're network friendly. We're working with the networks and the show producers. You do butt up against those types of issues, and sometimes it doesn't work out. But there are other times when the sponsors are not in conflict, and there's a way to make that work.
Colin, do you have any examples of
that? I mean, I think the easy way to think about it is, what's the win-win-win situation? How does it benefit the brand? How does it benefit the audience? And how does it benefit the client? You know, one current thing that we're doing now, I think, is a good example, is we partnered with, around our spring break programming, with Foursquare and with Sobe. So we put together a kind of campaign where Sobe is on college campuses with kiosks giving away some of their products. You could go check in at the kiosk, get a custom MTV Sobe branded badge, which would automatically enter you into a sweepstakes to win a trip to spring break. So it's a kind of a win across the board for everyone. You see there's a benefit for the audience. A real simple example of partnering with movie studios to get movie trailers out to the audience. We have a huge, around 100 million Facebook fans. You know, if it's a movie that we know our audience is going to care about, then that's an easy partnership. We'll use that as a way to get that trailer or sneak peek in front of the audience. So it's a win-win for everybody. The audience expects that type of content from us, and we're kind of delivering something that they want, and it's a great, powerful way for the movie studio to get to a highly engaged audience that they know are interested in that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'll ask the audience if they have any questions. The organizers have asked us to, if you have any questions, to use that microphone in the middle there. Mm-hmm. But the last question is around metrics, and I think that's something that everyone's interested in. I don't know if there's a silver bullet to measurement in the social space just yet, but what are you using and what do you measure as far as social media is concerned related to linear programming?
I'll just say one thing about that. That's probably not necessarily my area of expertise, but when we look at ratings, we look at two ways of measuring ratings, right? It's QM, so how many people are just coming to a particular hour, if you will, but we also measure time spent viewing. And I think that we're seeing terrific gains in time spent viewing, and I think that's largely because of the social media aspects of our shows. To Colin's earlier point, we don't engage at every level, the same level on every show, but we are in the hearts and minds of our consumers from a social perspective when it matters, in relevant, authentic ways. And I think that if you have an opportunity to tune out of that show, but you're so engaged that you stay with it, then that is increasing time spent viewing. And I think the correlation is there. The cause effect is harder to get at, but the correlation is really there. So that's my two cents on that.
Colin, do you want to?
Yeah, I would just say I think it depends on the goal of the campaign and what you're trying to do. In some cases, we're looking at, we're trying to increase awareness of a show, particularly if it's a new show. So in those cases, you look at buzz and retweets and shares and how the audience is kind of, disseminating the content. If the goal is driving image, then maybe you're looking at sentiment and measuring the tone of the conversation. Is it positive or negative? Are they comparing it to other things? I think there's different ways to slice it. There's so many new tools out there. I don't think there's one definitive kind of dashboard of tools to kind of measure kind of the success of a campaign. Again, there's different goals, and I think we're constantly experimenting with new ones and always kind of, figuring out what that ecosystem is.
Yeah. That's cool. Anything else to add, David or Ellen? No?
No.
I don't.
Okay. Silver bullet.
So So we are, I think, running a little bit late, but we definitely want to open it up to questions. So if anyone has a question, please.
Hello, quick question. My name is H.O. Maycott. I'm with Humble. And I know there's a lot of new metrics coming out and a lot of ways to slice and dice all of this. But at the end of the day, how much pressure are you getting from the business side of your organizations to show real dollar ROI on your social investment?
Is there anyone specific that you want to direct that to?
I'll take it. You know, social's in such an early stage right now that what we're doing right now is embracing it. So when you're embracing something, you're experimenting, you're innovating, you're iterating, and yes, do we want to see the trender report that says you've got the biggest conversation or you're trending? We absolutely do. But at this point, it's not as much about the real financial ROI as it is about the experience, the awareness, and the cumulative scale that we're looking at. Anybody have any?
Anything? I mean, I would add, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the big question everybody always asks. How do you monetize social? And I think it's, you can look at it either as how we're directly monetizing it through impressions and selling against it, you know, which is definitely a part of the conversation and one of the things that we're kind of coming up with new ideas on. And the other is, how does your kind of prowess in social media add value to you as almost a kind of an agency to the client? So in MTV's case, we have a lot of advertisers coming to us, not necessarily to buy into our social campaign, but to ask us as advisors, like, you guys are really successful in this space. Can you work with us to help us figure out how we can be more successful in this space? And so you see that halo effect of kind of that positive impact, which is really powerful.
We'll take another question since we're running out of time.
Hi, this is Mickey from Hakuhodo Advertisement Agency. So I think the social media layer is now become more common. So that's a purpose for the rating app. That's good. But I think as Suji talked about the commercial activity on the social layer.
Right.
So obviously brand or show producer looking for more revenue. So what's the next step to actually generate revenue, not just a rating app? Obviously, you can navigate to the people to the restaurant, or you can sell the placements, such as things, as a commerce function, the later layer of the social product. Mm-hmm. So what actually can do or industry looking for?
Did you want me to answer this?
Oh, if you can.
What's your name?
Mickey,
will you lower the mic for a second, a little bit? Just ask the question one more time.
It's a little hard. It was hard to
I couldn't hear you because it was way up.
Okay. So my question is the commercial activity on a social
right.
space is kind of like a taboo,
right?
So the what we're trying to do is just a rating up because of the people talking about that program. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if it's a benefit for the viewer,
right.
so you can send to the restaurant, maybe get some discount coupon, or you can sell some item that the audience would like to buy, purchase. I think Shazam is the most closest the entity to interact the commercial layer also, but
right.
what's the industry trying to do? Because just social media attached program is now become common, so everybody doing it.
Right.
So it's nothing
right.
to
okay.
generate more rating.
Right. Well, I think it's a transactional, you know, nature to your question as well. So I'll maybe let David speak to the transactional piece of that. But what I think the challenge is to help a lot of advertisers create great content, right? Mm. So I think it's absolutely amazing that Ritz would do the Super Bowl, right, and have Guy Fieri. This is 2 years ago because Clickio did it last year. Ellen. And Guy Fieri would get up there and talk about Ritz crackers and drive to a Facebook page that would, you know, generate an unbelievable amount of traffic. So I think the challenge is, it's not just about offers and I think, you know, promotion. I mean, there are certain groups of audiences that does appeal to, but I think it's a sacred rule, at least for us, that we don't over-commercialize that area. I think it's a terrible, terrible, it really breaks a certain form of trust. And I'm like really hyper passionate about this area. So I think my big idea is how do you take something like Facebook
take an advertiser that I think has real value to offer in this equation, and let's say a platform like the 12 Days of Cookies, let's just say. So during the holidays, we do something called the 12 Days of Cookies. King Arthur Flour would be a great partner in that. That would be a very authentic partner to pair with people who are really passionate about cookies, want to talk about cookies, want to do cookie swaps, want to show them, want to engage on them. And King Arthur Flour is a really cool, very authentic brand. So if you could have Facebook, King Arthur Flour, and Food Network's 12 Days of Cookies come together to create a social experience, that would be very honorable. And I think that we would be creating content that all of a sudden made flour really exciting. So I think you must pick and choose and do it right before you blast it out into the stratosphere, because I feel like I don't know how you can have a real social engagement with a cracker, you know, unless you have really great content. And I think that's what our jobs are, to find the intersection between great content with our partners so that our fans stay our fans.
So I think we're actually out
of time.
I'm sorry, that
was a long answer.
No, yeah, so I just don't want to... yeah, we'll take the additional questions, I think, because there's people waiting, but I just want everyone to know, I don't know if there's other sessions.
It's just a small one about authenticity. I'm a journalist, and I think it's all about trying and dare to experiment. How do you training your people in-house to dare to experiment, to try something, because training to that, it's so difficult, and the change is difficult to understand in-house. How do you do that? How do you train your own people to experiment and to dare?
I mean, I think that's an intro. Colin, maybe we could...
I think the way we look at it is we go into a kind of a new platform very carefully. We don't want to spread ourselves too thin. You want to kind of really understand how the community works on a particular platform. I mean, I think we're blessed with a really fantastic social media team who are very... They are consumers of the content and of those communities themselves, so they kind of naturally understand the space well. And I think that's really key. I think it's difficult when you kind of bring in kind of somebody almost kind of like hire a marketer to come in and kind of build community within a social space if they don't understand it first or are coming at it from a more academic standpoint rather than as a consumer. And I think that's key for us. So it's less about training and more about getting a person who just kind of naturally, emotionally understands what they're trying to do and connect with the audience and lives that space day to day. When we hire people, we look for people who are already playing on these platforms and living on them naturally on their own.
Because the sandbox is real, you know, right. The real time.
Right.
Okay. I would add to that, and at Bravo, there is no one department that owns social 100%. So when production comes in and they want to do something social, they have every right to get every other department on board. Digital and marketing, head to head. I mean, we work head to head, hand in hand.
So, that's a big slip.
Digital and marketing works hand in hand. And production, programming, we all work together. And social is, from the top down, social is a vision of the company. And I would guess that you guys have the same thing. So it's not thought of social belongs here, because it doesn't belong any one department. You have to make sure everyone knows they're responsible for social. They also know they're not allowed to tweet for the brand. So only certain people get to do that. But everyone is responsible for the ideas generation, for finding the new tools, finding the new Pinterest. That's got to be company-wide.
Thank you.
It's cool. Hi. So quick question. It seems like the brands represented on the panel are somewhat female heavy, or at least the networks are more like lady TV. Am I just interpreting it that way?
I like that you call my audience
lady TV.
No? All right. Well, then, just out of curiosity then, that happens to not be the case, what role do women play in the engagement, especially within social media, to drive the TV ratings? Like, is that a female-heavy space for you? And sort of what role do women play in that sphere, in that space?
Okay. Bravo thinks of ourselves as an adult brand. Now, we do have shows that are more female-driven, like Housewives, and then we have shows that are more male-oriented, like, 50-50, like a Top Chef or a Flipping Out on the design side. Both genders are social active. Certain people, I think females tend to go towards maybe a Facebook. Males like Twitter. I don't think that when we go to develop the social campaigns, we necessarily go there with a specific gender in mind. We recognize it, but I think social media right now is relatively gender neutral, with more nuancing than it is here's what you do for a female, here's what you do for a male, unless it's like a teenager, and then there's a whole different world there. Mm-hmm. Which Colin could talk to.
Yeah. Those unruly teens.
Yeah, I mean, MTV just certainly skews more female than it does male, at least with its current programming. I think a lot of social media is more female friendly. I think it depends on what it is. If you look at a StumbleUpon or a Dig, it's more male skewing, and so we may use those platforms differently if it's a different type of program. I think less about the platform and more about the content and the way you engage with the audience. We know that kind of storytelling and characters and the emotional connections with shows are what appeals to a lot of the kind of female part of our audience. So we understand that that's the way to connect with them. You know, it's no different from kind of photo sharing or the way that people that a lot of teen girls kind of talk amongst their friends. We try and just be authentic to that voice and the type of content that they like to share. You know, example might be we know guys like to share funny content, and it's more the currency that they find there is about if I share this funny clip, it says that I'm funny. Whereas a lot of the young women in our audience share content might be different. They're looking for a different level of currency. Sharing content may say something personal about them, but it's maybe humor is less of the skew. It might be more music or something else like that. I mean, I think it really varies on what it is.
So I'm really sorry. I think we're getting like the hook.
Yeah. That's fine.
Oh, I feel bad.
Yeah, I know. Do you want to just come up and ask the question while we're cleaning up? Because, well, anyway, thank you everyone for coming. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks you guys. Thank you.